This is session two of the PDH Online audio course on electrical specifications. Our topic is old 1999 CSI specification format. The construction specifications presently in almost universal use are based upon the CSI 1995 format. The 1999 is the internal page format. The 1995 is the numbering system. So the correct terminology at this point is we're talking about the 1995 format. For discussions of who CSI is and how the specifications are organized, please jump ahead to part two. The two large commercial sources for construction specifications are CSI, the Construction Standards Institute, and BSD, Building Systems Design. Since putting together this course, I've encountered in web searches something called spec text. I haven't been able to research this. They may also be a vendor. I'm pretty certain they are a vendor of specifications. I don't know how they compare with CSI and BSD. The current list of electrical specifications offered by these two firms follows. You will note that the numbers don't always exactly line up. The 1995 format specs are still available from both firms and are not expected to be abandoned. This is followed by a very long list of specifications with two columns. The left-hand column is BSD SpecLink Plus. The right-hand column is AIA/ARCOM Master Spec. I'm trying to think how to summarize this for you best. I think we'll spend a little time reading it and then pause to comment periodically. And in fact, I'll spend a lot of time commenting on this. I've started with section 01300 because this is referenced by most electrical specifications. So you could say to yourself, well, we're Division 16 guys, we're electrical. Why are we talking about Division 1, 01300, Administrative Requirements for Submittal Procedures? Because there is an underlying question which may or may not ever surface, but what is the contractor supposed to send to the engineer for review? Well, this is clearly defined in 01300. And if you get a packet of stuff from the contractor and it doesn't look right, go back to 01300 and see if it matches what he was told to do. 01400 is quality requirements. And this is especially interesting to us because it covers such things as delivering used material or damaged material to the project site. These are specifically forbidden. You don't have to say this in every specification. I'm pausing when I say this because there are exceptions where it's important to say that in every specification. But in general, when we are part of a project manual containing the administrative front-end material and the Division 16 out back where we do most of our work, things like quality requirements are covered in 01400 and referenced from the electrical spec before we get into the core material in each specification. And the reason this is being presented here is because of the importance of checking in the project manual to make sure the architect or project manager has included 01400. If it's not there, then you do have to put in quality requirements. And let's do a quick aside since we're on this point. What are quality requirements? Well, I think the critical items are what I just mentioned. You want new materials. You don't want them to bring stuff that didn't fit into the last job and spend bouncing around the back of their truck for 2 months. First class condition, that just covers an awful lot of problems that come up. And UL approved for the application. Those are just absolutely critical. The exceptions I was talking about a moment ago, sometimes we get very small jobs. I've had a number of jobs where we didn't issue a specification manual. All we issued was the drawing, and along the side of the drawing we put the specifications. Well, you have to put in these requirements if you're not getting front-end support on it. If you're issuing only electrical specifications for an electrical-only job, you've got to tell the contractor that he's supposed to show you what kind of motors he's proposing, what kind of conduit he's proposing, what kind of wire he's proposing, what kind of data jacks. I mean, don't go overboard, but obviously things that are critical, things that he could go cheap on and hurt the project, you want to see it before he buys it. quality requirements. Again, if you're putting on sheet specifications, don't have a front end from the architect, you've got to put this stuff on your own. On again, focusing on the front end specifications that are important to the electrical, 01600 is product requirements that has the rules for specification for substitutions. Now, this is discussed in some detail later in the course, but some projects are government funded. Typically, on government funded projects, you are forced to accept substitutions which are or equal. Now, what does or equal mean? In my mind, it means you go down the two data sheets for the two products and they have equal or superior for the substitution. If I can find something where the preferred vendor has galvanized steel and the substitute vendor has raw mild steel, I'm going to reject it. Galvanized is going to last a lot longer than unpainted mild steel, I mean uncoated mild steel. But again, what do we do with products requirements and substitutions? It should be handled in the front end and it should be referenced by the electrical specification. Now, back to the list of 1995 specification. 16000 is division 16 is electrical. What's in electrical? Well, there are a lot of things in electrical that you'd expect to be in electrical, and there are a number of things that don't quite fit in electrical, but they sure don't fit anyplace else. So up until the revision of 2004, things like security and data, I'm trying to think if fire alarms is still in it in the revision. Fire alarms are critical to every project, but where do they go? I mean, are they special systems? Are they security? I think they've moved down to security since we have a new division for security in the revised format. But again, Division 16 is electrical. 16050 is basic materials and methods. There's going to be a lot of discussion later on about whether we should even use this specification. There are people who say the only purpose of 16050 is for the small on-sheet specifications. It's not intended for large projects where electrical is a small part of what's going on and there's going to be a book an inch and a half thick. 16051, overcurrent protective device coordination study. If you've been taking the PDH courses on the National Electric Code or an external course, you probably discovered that coordination study is required. Well, actually, the wording of the new National Electric Code is short circuit withstand is required, and there's no other way to find out except do the overcurrent protective study. 16060, grounding and bonding. 16070, hangers and supports. Hangers and supports cause more trouble than you can imagine. And I think it comes back to this thing. I don't want to generate animosity, and I don't know for a fact this is the motivation. But it's cheaper to do it poorly than to do it well. I've watched contractors in the field, and the people who are proud of their work are using the explosive-powered anchors. And Hilti, I think, makes these epoxy studs. They're just fantastic. You drill a hole a little oversized to your stud, pull this stud out of the pack, and it's got a gob of epoxy on the end of it in a plastic case. You tap it once with a hammer that breaks the plastic closure. The epoxy mixes, it covers the stud, and you have a fantastic anchor there. I mean, it's stronger than the wall around it. Well, that's not the same as putting in a wood plug. And that's why we worry about hangers and supports. Seismic controls for electrical work is 071. Is that important? Boy, that's important in California. And I've been told that in the eastern states with very rare seismic activity, it's also important. It's important to the authority having jurisdiction. You won't get your plans approved without it. Now, again, that's the local authority having jurisdiction, and you have to determine in your case whether you need that section. And typically, the content of seismic controls for electrical work is that the contractor has to include submittals for seismic withstand. They're different classifications. It is not as burdensome as it sounds. It just makes people do things they've never done before. Electrical identification depends on who you're working with, especially places that have no documentation whatsoever on their installations. They don't care if the wires and conduits are identified. On the other hand, people that have a lot of turnover and they consider their process critical do want documentation and do want electrical identification. Minor electrical demolition. This is part of the discussion of, do we put in the 050 spec or do we put in all the individual specs? The 050 spec has a section on demolition. Do we want to duplicate that with a separate larger spec on demolition? This will be discussed in detail in the course. Now we get into some of the strange and peculiar sections. I'm going to skip things from the list because it's more confusing than illuminating. Something in the range of 16020 is conductors and cables. We have to call out that we want THHN on copper. I don't think anybody wants aluminum. Yes, there are arguments out there. I don't deny that they're valid arguments. But my concern is that aluminum requires a little more attention from the field personnel, and I have no way to guarantee the field personnel are going to be able to supply that attention or even know that it's required. I have gotten used to the idea of aluminum windings on transformers because it's done by factory people with quality control looking right over their shoulder. I am not comfortable with aluminum for field work, but you got to tell the contractor this, especially when the manufacturers are trying to enter a market. They'll lowball stuff, so it's almost impossible for the contractor not to use it if he can get away with it. Well, he can't get away with it on my job. So we were saying 16020. Here it's called 16123, building wire and cable. What do you do with instrument cable? That's always been a problem. I used to work in the process industries where we had more instrumentation cable than power cable. Huge bundles of this stuff. Well, fortunately, we had an entire instrumentation group. They issued their own instrumentation cable spec. The projects I'm working on now have a little bit of instrumentation cable, certainly some data cable, some telephone cable. Where do you put it? I put it in a building wire and cable because, again, where are you going to put it? You can create a new spec. There is nothing in this system to forbid you from creating a new specification. You can even use an existing number if you want a lot of confusion. I have created specifications, and I try to come up with a number that I don't see being used on the list. A lot easier in the newer 2004 version because they left a lot of blank spaces specifically for that purpose. I think they're planning to fill them in later, and that's meaningful, but you have them available in the meantime. Manufactured wiring assemblies. What in the world could that be? 16127. What's going on there? There's one in lighting, and I think it's a separate manufactured wiring assemblies in the lighting portion of electrical, where they ship the fixtures with a plug on the back of them, and they ship the whips with a matching plug, and all you have to do is hook the whip up to a junction box in the ceiling and snap it into the light, and it goes on. Sometimes they even daisy chain these things, so one light sources the next sources the next. I have been told by contractors I trust that there's a tremendous labor saving in the field, which more than offsets the additional cost of these. Well, what are you going to get? Do you really want that? This is where you get to say that. Now, again, I believe the one we're really talking about is going to be up in 16510, where we talk about lighting. But the manufactured wiring assemblies also apply to partitions, you know what I'm talking about, cubicles, and they have a drop out of the ceiling and a post, and it plugs into it, or it comes up out of the floor with a piece of flex cable and plugs into it. But they're real big on plugs, and these are manufactured wiring assemblies. 16130, raceways and boxes. 16131, conduit. Some people combine conduit and raceway and boxes. We're going to use this in a lot of our examples in the course. Surface raceways. Major brand is Wiremold. Be warned the difference between plastic surface raceway, steel surface raceway. And I'm still looking for something the kids can stand on without ripping it out of the wall or ripping the top off of it. Cable trays, utility columns, cabinets and enclosures. wiring devices 16140. Requires very careful attention. A lot of owners are getting to the place they want special colors. I have one client I work with, spends a lot of money. They want blue receptacles for computers. Well, most manufacturers don't make blue receptacles, so you're forced to buy from the people who do make them. I got into a real spitting contest on specification versus construction grade, and we went back to looking at the details of construction, the metals used and the plating used, and it turned out what one guy called construction grade was the same as what another guy called specification grade. If I use the word specification grade in my purchase specification, I'm restricting it to the one manufacturer who chooses to use that word. Is that desirable? Well, you have to decide for yourself. Sometimes when it is an especially premium product that benefits the owner, you want to do that. Typically, you want to bid the project. 16210. This is relatively new. I hadn't seen this until the last 2 years. Electrical utility services. You know, we've always got to have power to run a project. If there is negotiation and wiring necessary to upgrade the service, somebody's got to do that. Let's pay the contractor to do it. Let's tell him we have to pay the contractor to do this. On a greenfield project, again, there's some negotiation on the engineering side, but exactly where's the pole going to be? Is the conduit going to make the utility happy? Well, let's make sure the conduit makes the utility happy. We have provision for metering. This comes out of 16210, Electrical Utility Services. 16215, Electrical Sensing and Measurement. That doesn't sound very good, but as we are getting into higher cost utilities, people are a lot more sensitive into what they're doing with their power. And to my mind, it's only prudent to put a meter on the incoming. You get so many benefits from this. First, an engineer or electrician can walk up to the main switchboard and see if everything's live and everything's within spec. If you've got a low phase coming in, you're going to have problems all the way through the plant. Having a meter there, you know the difference. A little bit of extra money, and you can record demand and look over the last 30 days and find out why you're paying $30,000 extra in demand. Something happened at one particular time, and at least you know what time it is to chase it down. And I have an ongoing argument with everyone I encounter. There's a $420 digital meter that concurrently displays 3 volts, A, B, and C, or 3 amps, A, B, and C, does the KW calculation, stores the max for the month, and with $100 extra, it has Modbus communication and data storage, the 30-day record I was talking about. $420 plus your current transforms. I try to put these in on every job. Typically what happens is someone with strong opinions either insists that we upgrade to a $10,000 system or cuts it out completely because we can't afford $400 for that. These are people who don't have much contact with maintenance, I'm afraid. Packaged engine generators at 16231. Static uninterruptible power supplies. I'm still doing some process jobs. They really like to have a big battery pack and inverter to run their central control system. So if they lose power for the big motors, they can at least watch it come down. Got into an interesting situation on a recent project. I'm sure you'll be interested in this. We kept the controls alive, but let the power go down. And we had these big motor-operated valves. Big motor-operated valves operated on 480 volts. We could watch them sit there wide open, but we couldn't close them because we didn't run the 480 off the UPS. Typically, UPS are exclusively 120, 120, 208, something like that. You don't get 480 unless you put a transformer in there. And a motor-operated valve might not be something you really want to put on your UPS. Plus the fact we had hand wheels. We could send a guy out there to crank it down himself. And again, under shutdown circumstances, I think you want operators out there seeing what's going on. Dry type transformer, 16272. 16280, power factor correction capacitors. Please be warned on power factor correction capacitors. I went to a course last week where once again the instructor was saying, buy capacitors, 1 year payback. Yes. I'm not denying with anything they're saying. There are two serious caveats for power factor correction capacitors. Never, ever say power factor correction capacitor without worrying about these two items. First, the system will ring after you install power factor capacitors. You've put a resonant element into the system. It already had inductance. Now it's got capacitance. There is a resonant ring frequency that you have created by installing those capacitors. The kind of thing you worry about is dampening. If you put them someplace there's a resistive load or load with a large resistive component, you'll dampen out the ringing, and the problem isn't nearly so serious. But if for whatever reason you put the capacitors as a place there at the end of an open circuit, nasty, nasty, nasty. So please, yes, one-year payback with a little care. The other worrisome thing about power factor capacitors is they don't get maintenance.
But there's nothing to maintain on a power factor capacitor.
Yes, there is. They tend to blow out their fuses. But they don't blow all three fuses. They blow one fuse. So now you've got capacitors on 2-year lines and no capacitor on the third line. Now, fortunately, in a year or two, it's going to blow out those other two fuses. But this is a bad situation. You don't want unbalanced voltage in any kind of facility, commercial, church, factory. You don't want unbalanced voltage. So capacitors require some attention. Yes, there's a wonderful benefit from them. Switchgear, 16341. And where are panel boards? Because there's a... Where are they? They should be right in front of me. Tremendous argument about switchboards versus panel boards. Look at this. Now, what did I just tell you? I saw switchgear at 16341, but I think maybe that's medium voltage, yes. As we get down here a little farther into the 16400 category, we get switchgear and panel board, 16441, 16442. Tremendous argument on how much value you get out of the extra money for switchboards. Switchboards are better. They're huskier. There's no question it's a superior product, but it can cost 3, 4, 5 times as much. Does it provide anything in your application that wouldn't be equally provided from a panel board? In closed circuit breakers, never seen a project didn't have any, 16411. In closed switches, the outside disconnect on the HVAC unit, things like that. In closed transfer switches, 16413. You'd think it would be related to generator sets, but it has its own separate section. I guess it's closer to switchgear than it is to generating equipment, but obviously they have to go together. In closed motor controllers, at 16423, which you and I know as motor starters, motor control centers, 16424. Now this is, I'm reading the BSD spec numbers because the column happens to come before the spec link part numbers, but they're in very close proximity, whichever one you're in, and they tend to have the same content, but they have different numbers in the 1995 format numbering system. Fuses, 16491. I just got some very, very interesting information on series rated panel boards. Maybe I'll get a chance to share it with you later. It has to do with type T or class T fuses. If you want an upstream protection for a panel board that doesn't have withstand capability, you buy a series rated panel board. Unfortunately, it needs a class T fuse, which is almost impossible to find, and you can guarantee will not be replaced when it blows. 16510, interior luminaires, and I was saying this modular wiring often is very close to 16510 because that's one of the prime applications for it. 16520, exterior luminaires. Theatrical lighting, 16555. That is such a fun area. I hope you get involved in that someday. Two ways to handle 16555 theatrical lighting. You can either go to a consultant who will do an excellent job for you. I have no reservations whatsoever. He may be unwilling to tell you what he's selling you. He'll guarantee it'll work and everybody will be happy, but he won't give you enough information to bid the thing competitively. Oh, well, that's what goes on. If you want to do it yourself, it takes a little study in the library and reading some catalogs, maybe even a little time on the internet. Now, I mentioned earlier that there's some odd things that ended up in electrical just because there's no place else to put them, which is true for 1995 and has changed for 2004. 16700 communications. Something called structured telecommunications cabling and enclosures. It's funny, most places that care about this, now the engineer always cares about it, but when the owner cares about it, what that means is they're in bed with one particular vendor. When you hear the word structured telecommunications cabling enclosures, it usually means Hubble or Panduit. And they're both excellent. I'm not throwing any stones at anybody. And I even think there's some advantage to having consistency at an installation. So the guy knows how to punch one down. They all punch down the same way. And the other thing perhaps we should think about on 16710 structured telecommunications cabling enclosures is TIA 568 and 569, because those are the ones you really need in here. Yes, we have a specification, but the specification is to reference TIA 568 and 569. Television distribution, 16781. That's not security television. I imagine you could use it that way. Usually security television is done differently with a different number. Public address systems. And I'm not seeing any security in here. A lot of places have gone to a Division 17 for stuff that gets an awful lot of attention, typically gets a separate consultant, a separate designer. I mean, and 1700 was a nice catch-all for that. 1700 was never recognized in the CSI format. This is a case of writing your own specification to meet your needs. And it happened often enough that there was some consistency. 17,000 was also used for process controls. I was mentioning the process guys like to buy their own instrument cable. Fine. Where are you going to put it? Well, if you decide Division 17's mine, then you don't let them put the security stuff in there. Maybe they can go to 18, or maybe they'll nestle it into electrical someplace. Well, this completes Session 2. I hope you'll join me again for Session 3, which is a very similar discussion of the 2004 CSI format. And it's a long list that we'll be discussing in some detail, both the other divisions and electrical. A lot of emphasis on electrical.